Hopefully you're here for a Q&A on worship. If you're here to have a coffee, then just carry on and pretend you're here for a Q&A on worship. My name's Mike, you know that. Would you three just say a little bit about yourselves and I'll say something about him? Okay? In fact, I'll say something about him. The gentleman on the end probably won't be answering questions after the first few minutes because he'll probably be asleep. So if you listen, I have been waiting years. I have been waiting years. When I heard, my response was, hallelujah. Thank you, Lord. You love me very much. Oh, they don't know.
I don't think so.
Oh, so some of you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? No. He was a bit late for his seminar because he fell asleep. And it was just wonderful. And I'm hopefully going to go to his church. I've been going every year. Next June. You don't understand. I don't want an invitation. I don't expect an invitation. I wouldn't go if there was an invitation. I'm just going to turn up one Sunday and I'm going to tell his church and I'm going to so enjoy myself. And so, seriously, this is my dear friend, Carl Tuttle, and Carl really has pioneered, the way we worship. And particularly the emphasis on intimacy, on flowing, on the songs, the intimacy in songs, and the not, you know, the just flowing from one to another, and why we do that, so many of the songs that he wrote years ago had a profound effect on the church, and actually still do, and it's actually been wonderful, wonderful. Having him here. It's a dream I've had for a long, long time. I'm just really glad he didn't sleep through the whole week. So I'm sorry. I just had to do that.
I'm Beth. I'm married to Andy. And I started leading worship when I was about 18, something like that. I don't really know what to say. I've got two kids and I spend most of my time with them at the moment. So yeah, used to head up worship at Soul Survivor, and now I'm a full-time mom. So yeah, that's me.
My name's Dave, and I'm a worship pastor at a church called Trent Vineyard over in Nottingham. So involved there, and also at sort of other vineyard stuff around the country. And I'm here with my wife Lizzie and two little boys. We're camping up on Green, which is an experience, but good. Yeah, that's me.
Hello, I'm Tom, and I'm the worship pastor at our church in Watford, Soul Survivor. And, I'm married to, Susie, and she's around somewhere, and we just had a little baby called Sunny. He's 7 weeks old this week, so this is all very new to me. Lots of coffee.
I introduced him. Okay. We just got the one microphone, have we? Yeah. All right. Who's going to be first with a question? Anything to do with worship, worship leading, can be songwriting, can be anything. Oh, you've got the other. Great.
Hello. I just want to say, first of all, thank you for such a fantastic week. I've lost my voice. The worship has been absolutely amazing. So I'm meant to be leading worship at church on Sunday and I've had to ask someone to take it over because there's no way I can sing. So thank you. My question is a really basic one. So sorry if this is very simple. The flowing. So one of the problems we have at church is everything's in different keys and we sing all the same songs that we've sung this week pretty much. So do you transpose all of the songs in advance? And then you go, right, I know that all of these are in C. I know that all of these are in E. So you have like banks of songs in the same key. Does that make sense? I know that the keys do change during a time of worship, but usually you have a good break or the keyboard just comes in and takes over in a different key. But so do you do that in advance? And do you do that for each of your own voices? So Beth, obviously you sing in a different key to you, Tom, and you, Dave. So sorry if that's really basic, but at the moment you see we're like, okay, now we have to kind of stop or really artificially change into the next key. So that's it, my question. Thank you.
Yeah, so It slightly depends on which context I'm leading in, but normally I'll try and have at least a number of songs in the same key, just because it keeps that flow. And often that will be because I know that the songs are in that key and it's comfortable for my voice. So sometimes the key a little bit will determine the songs I choose. Does that make sense? So I'll go, great, I know these songs are in G. I'm going to put songs together that are all in G, and that helps. And other times I'll just see whether I can sing a song in a key that's gonna flow. So this morning, as an example, in the acoustic worship early morning thing, I was just in D, and I was in D. We were in D for like an hour, so I'm sorry for any of you who were there. We're in D for a long time, but I did songs that they're not in D. Some of them I wouldn't normally sing in D, but I just did for the sake of the flow in the moment, and it just felt like the right thing to do. And so, I did. I wouldn't always do that, but I do think increasingly that having some level of fluidity in the music and the key is really helpful. And it does create that sense of flow rather than a broken up thing. So.
Yeah, it's just a practical thing, really. I think just helping be in the same key just helps that sense of flow. And I think don't ever let it determine your set list as well. I think one of the main things is when you're choosing those songs is, what is that journey? What is the Holy Spirit talking to you about? And don't let, you know, sometimes it's easy to be like, oh, that song's in G, that song's in G. And then sometimes you're singing songs, you know, suddenly like, one's about, you know, we're singing, and then it's about the cross, and then suddenly it's about something else, and it's like, oh, this isn't really flowing in that sense. So you've got the practical side of flowing, but then you've also got the lyrical side of the flow as well, which I think is really important. So, but the practical thing is, yeah, just songs in the right key really, really helps that sense of flow song by song.
I just want to ask Carl on that, because kind of you kind of pioneered that really in many ways, and just we went from one love song to another almost it just flowed without breath. Was that you said the other day that in when you started leading worship, I mean, you didn't have a set list, you didn't. Now, was it that you just got there in front of a mic with your guitar and you started to worship? And as you worshipped, it would be like you would be worshipping in your room, and you go from one song to another. Or did you have in your mind, gosh, this is where we're going to go, even though you didn't write it down or you didn't give it, and just the musicians went with you? How did it work for you? Because there was something absolutely wonderful about, and actually it happened this morning, the same thing, in that we just went, oh my word, we could stay here forever.
I can see in my mind what was going to happen in a meeting, and that's what I've relied upon. So I might not have had a set list, and I rarely did. The musicians with me never had a set list, and they didn't know what we were going to sing or when we were going to change keys or anything. But I could see the meeting in my mind, and I still can. I can just see and feel what's going to take place and what's going to grip people. And so I kind of just, I go with that. And it's kind of an intuitive thing, but an intuitive thing with, an inner knowledge, you know, of what connects and what doesn't. So like I said before, it's not the way to do it. It's just the way I did it. But I did try. I love there to be space in the end or somewhere in it, but not during the worship. I've never ever talked during the worship. I've been very rare to ever interrupt the worship with talking. And now people do, and that's okay. There's no rule against it, but I just tried to maintain the flow and maintain the connection. And I probably stayed in certain keys a long time and then changed over, but that was simple.
Hi, sorry. Just as you're talking about not talking during singing, I'd just like somebody maybe to comment on the role of the spoken word at some point during singing, because I notice we don't do that here. But I've been in places, and in our church we would sometimes. We might have maybe a Bible reading or just a prayer or something like that. That would be part of the worship time. And then we'd move into a different song. I just wondered, has anybody got a comment or an opinion on that?
Okay. Well, I think that it's just what Carl said. There's different ways of doing it. I ask our worship leaders not to. And in fact, I wouldn't, you know, we would, cause for this, I'd rather we flowed and I'd rather we went, you know, cause it's a little bit like for me, and there's different ways, you know, I've been to conferences where, you know, there'll be a song and then there'll be a reading and then there'll be, two songs and someone will say, you know what, let's sing that second verse again and just look at the words and then there'll be, someone will pray and then someone will encourage. Now everyone raise your hands and all of that. And I think there can be a place for that. I have found it, if I'm really honest, incredibly distracting. And I, you know, I just want to, I'm there with you, Lord. I just want to tell you I love you. I just want to, you're speaking to me by your spirit. And then it's like every time, oh, and I actually think, you know, sometimes there is a place for encouraging people to, you know, I mean, occasionally with the young people on, when I know they're being inhibited, you know, we sing dance, everybody dance, and three of them are dancing, and you know the others are on the verge and they want to. I'll go up and I'll say, let's change the words to that and sing sway, sway, gently, gently sway. And then everyone laughs and I say, come on, why don't we sing as we, and occasionally, but actually we want people to raise their hands because they want to raise their hands, not because someone's told them or to kneel because they want to kneel. And what the place I'd love to get is when in a time of worship. I mean, I remember years ago, when Martin Smith had just written, Over the Mountains and the Sea, and before they were Delirious, when they were the cutting edge band, they came and led worship. I used to lead New Wine Youth just before we started Soul Survivor. So we're talking about 27, 28 years ago. And he just written it and he started singing, I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. And you know what? We sang that line, I think, for maybe half an hour. And normally, you know, I say to our guys, please, can we sing another line at some stage? But in that instance, and sometimes it was like, at first I was like, what are you doing? Have you forgotten the next verse? Have you forgotten the next song you can? And I was like, do I go and whisper to him? And then I actually stopped and I looked round. And after a while, it was a bit like the strings the other day. It was like, what's going on? In half an hour, there were moments where the band went down and stopped it and we were whispering it. I could sing of your love forever. I could sing of your love forever. 15 minutes later, we were screaming it at the top of our voices. I could sing of your love forever. And the whole band was playing. And then as it was happening, you know, I saw there was someone on his knees kneeling. There was the others just standing there, not singing anymore with their hands in the air. There was someone just dancing. There was others weeping. There were others doing also, it was just like there was this intimacy and it was every individual and the Lord, and then it was all of us and the Lord. And it was like, if anyone had said anything then, it would have been, oh, it would have been like a jolt. And so I hear that. I think another way of doing the spoken word, the readings, is to do that in other places and to be creative. And maybe, in this, but I think for us, we've discovered with worship in song, to have the minimum of someone interjecting, because I think the aim of a worship leader is to be so visible that they give a lead, but not so visible that they become the center, that they get in the way. And I think sometimes when it's been lots of different things, it can seem very creative, but actually you lose the intimacy. Now we can agree to differ, because I've been in places where the other way works, but you're asking an opinion and I've given mine. others can say other things if they, you, yeah. Yeah, I think that's where we're, and that's what we want to try and get to. That's what we want to try and get to, in our worship. And who else? Just put your hand up and then they'll go to you. All right. There's a whole bunch over there.
Hi. Just a question about how can we get kids involved in like the joint worship times where it's the whole church worshiping together? Without the kids kind of getting bored and just like playing on the iPads. And have you got any tips on how to get the kids involved?
Get Ren Collective to come and play. That's who my kids love. My Lighthouse goes down well. We tend to, so, when we do, a few times a year, we do all church sort of services which involves, which is adults and kids and youth and all of them. And what we tend to do at those things is there's a kids band. There's not kids leading the band. It's an adult-led band, but it's for kids. And they tend to lead the worship. And then the worship, the set, has a little bit of, it has some kids songs, some adult songs, and there's a mixture there to try and offer something for everyone, I suppose. We don't do it every week because it always feels like, no one's fully happy. So we don't do it every week, but we do it a couple of times a year. Because actually it is beautiful to look out and see the whole age range, you know, they're worshiping. But we tend to keep it as sort of special occasion rather than every week. That's the way we do it.
For us, we don't have family services that often. We'd have perhaps for a baptism service, everybody together for a couple of songs at the end. But generally the kids have their own worship, in their own age groups. And so that would be, although I suppose the way it's led is age appropriate. Often a lot of the songs are the same. And actually there are some people, it's a completely different way of leading worship, isn't it? I'm not sure. I'd know my boys wouldn't sit through half an hour, 40 minutes of, you know, intimate worship. I think that would just wouldn't be done. You know, they would need that engagement. They would need a voice engaging them. You know, what might be a distraction for an adult would actually be incredibly helpful for a child. And so different context just seems to work well for us on a regular basis. So they have someone that's A, really passionate about that, but also really understands how to communicate with children in the context of worship. I can remember the first time I did it, and I just got up there and just assumed it was exactly the same. Shut my eyes, went for it, flowed from song to song for 20 minutes, and the kids just didn't get it. So that took a little bit of learning, so yeah.
Who else?
Hello. Quick question. It's sort of a two-part question, so I feel kind of cheeky. But you were talking about yesterday, Carl, in your talk about bringing everybody together, and I think, Mike, you've said it as well, that you have to get the whole church to go with you, otherwise it doesn't work, which I super agree with. But how do you deal with it? Because I've only led worship a few times. I'm on the worship team, but I've only led it a couple of times. How do you deal with the people you know don't want to or are there because they come to church, they stand there, and then that's them for the week? And how do you deal with that, and how do you do it? Like, because you're not there for performing, you're there to like catalyst them, to get them into the presence. How do you deal with that, and how do you not feel responsible that you've not got them in the presence, even though it's not your responsibility? But how do you deal with not feeling responsible that you've not done your job right?
First of all, I want to say something about the children's thing. In our church, we have classrooms for the children, so we put them in there and lock the doors. That's how we deal with it. And it's very effective. I'm not serious. I look at church. I had to early on kind of learn not to parent the church and not to, you know, exhort the church in kind of a critical parent way. And I came up with this idea that the church is like where I live, we have an ocean, you know, there, and then the sand, and then a wall, you know, that you can sit on, and then the parking lot. And I kind of look at church that way. There's some people that just like to go down to the beach and sit in their car, believe it or not, and read a book or read a newspaper, and that's just fine. Then there are people like they like to get out and they like to sit on the wall and look at the ocean, look at people doing it, and others go onto the sand and put their stuff out there and have a picnic, and there are the people that kind of go down to the water's edge and start, you know, wading in and getting used to it. And then there are other people, and we know who those people are. They just run in and they get you and everybody else wet as they just dive in wholeheartedly into the ocean. And I just see the church as that all the time. It's always in one of those places. So there are people that just aren't ready to enter in. And like you said, it's not my job to get them to. And you do want to. You do have this parent come up inside of you that just wants to tell them what to do. But I like it a lot better to just let the Holy Spirit do that and let them be induced by His presence and by His wooing and just mind my own business. That's my way.
And I think as well, just to add to that, it's, you know, I've had those times of worship where, you know, there are people going for it and then there are people just standing there staring at you and you want to kick them. Be like, I'm going to make you worship. But it's, I think, like one of the things we always say is, I think if you want to go together, you got to go slower. And just learning that as a worship leader as well, I think, you know, we want to get to that place where everyone's involved, but it takes time, you know, it takes time. I think those people who are with you, who are enthusiastic worshippers, I find are always and will always be enthusiastic worshippers. And, I think just, you know, be patient, just keep worshiping and keep teaching through the worship as well. And I think they'll hopefully catch on and keep praying for them as well.
I agree with all that. Who else? Yeah. And then there's that lady there, and then the guy there, and then where? And then the gentleman there. That's it.
Hey, so I'm just curious for you guys, I know kind of people do this different, but how much of what you do when you're leading worship is pre-planned and how much of it is kind of prophetic in the moment? So, yeah.
So personally, it varies depending on different contexts I'm leading in. Often if you've got more people that you're playing with, then there needs to be an element of structure because you've all got to be playing the same chords at the same time, hopefully. And but if it's just me on a guitar in a smaller group, or I tend to plan less, and I just maybe like you were saying, I just jump in with a song and then we'd see where it goes. And so it would slightly vary. But having said that, I'm trying when I'm playing with more people, I'm trying to sort of create a little bit more space for to just go where the Lord's saying. So if I have a band practice, and you guys could do this as well, but if you're having a band practice with however many really, what I'll tend to do is I'll have we'll practice through a bunch of songs. And then I'll say, let's just take one of those songs and let's just worship together and let's learn how to flow together in just spontaneous worship where we're out of the sort of, we're doing verse, chorus, bridge, double chorus, big end, song done, you know. So I'm really keen whenever I'm playing with people to try and push beyond that point in terms of our capacity to play together. And sometimes that just takes time doing it. And so we would often do that even in like a rehearsal, we'll just say, let's just worship together now. Let's use the songs we've practiced, but let's actually be fluid with them and see how it goes. And you start to get a feel for how you build and how you develop and where you're going. So that's how sort of I approach it.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's just, I think it's sometimes healthy, especially when you've got a band involved, to go in with a plan and just be open to the Holy Spirit taking over. And, you know, sometimes it's very rare these days that we stay to a set list of what we do have planned, because it's the Holy Spirit turns up. And, you know, like this morning, we didn't have that song, I Stand Amazed in the Presence. And it was like, but I think there was just a thick presence of the God in the room. And at that moment, it just felt like, wow, we need to honor that. And we stand amazed. That just was a song that just came to mind. It was like, let's just sing this out. And I think that's what the Holy Spirit loves, is when we just stand there and honor him. And, but you know, when you're just on your own or on acoustic or a piano, you know, I'll often just start with a song and then get an idea of where it's going from there as well. It's a bit easy when you're on your own, but when you've got a band, sometimes it's good to have a bit of a plan. But yeah.
Sorry, I always just think, sometimes that prophetic element, sometimes we can think that only happens in the moment. It's only prophetic if it's in the moment. But I think often I'll come into a worship set and I'll have a sense of like, I feel like this could be the song that really ignites. And I don't really know why. It's not always just because that's the best song, you know, it just like a little sense. And sometimes it's right. And sometimes it's wrong. But wherever I have that sense, I tend to try and build in the possibility for space. So I'll say to the band, let's just, when we get to this song, let's just make sure that we can just roll around the chords, you know, so we're not having to move on straight away. And it's just like an inkling. And I think sometimes that is just the Lord. It doesn't always have to be in the moment. In advance of it, you can almost feel, I think maybe this could be the point that really the Lord just really ignites something. So.
And just a really tiny thing about people doing the words, if that, in your context, you have somebody doing the words. Often that role gets overlooked, the importance of that role. But if that person doesn't understand the role of Holy Spirit-led worship, that we're actually ultimately being led by the Spirit rather than the plan, you know, the sheet that you gave them with all the songs on, it can make it really difficult, and it can just end up being really frustrating for them and really frustrating for the worship leader. And so if they understand that actually here's the plan, but it could go anywhere, and they are flexible and they understand that that's like part of their ministry, then they are doing so much to aid being led by the Spirit. Completely underrated, I think. But they, you know, if you've got someone that's just stuck in their thing and they can't, or they refuse to find the words because, well, it's not on the sheet you gave me, you know, that can really hinder being able to be led. So that's such a really important role.
I started trying to lead worship the last few weeks at our Wednesday night deal because I wanted to practice to try to be able to lead worship here, which I'm not doing too well. So I just got up there and I was just leading, and the gal who did the words was quite upset with me because I hadn't told her what I was going to do because I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I changed things from, went from this to that to another. So afterwards she said, can I talk to you? And she really got in my face, you know, and inappropriately, she wasn't rude or anything, but she had been really frustrated by the way I did it. And she communicated that with me, and I listened to her, and I didn't react offensively, but I said, okay, thank you for that. But you do need to be aware that when I lead worship, it'll be like this. Because it's the way I do it. And I'm sorry that it frustrates you. Well, the next week she showed up and she said, okay, I got it. So she was ready to go with the flow and adjust to it. But at least the fact I acknowledged her and I acknowledged the difficulty she was having and didn't react negatively to her, but thanked her for it, but just explained to her that I'm just not that way. So that she was fine with that.
And just one last little thing, which is kind of a bit wider, but includes that. I just think leading worship, it's a weird combination of preparation, of intuition, and of common sense. And the Holy Spirit can lead in the preparation, in the intuition, and the common sense. And he cannot lead in any of those. But actually what I've noticed is just sometimes, you know, just having something written, just even if it's just preparation in prayer, you know, Lord, what, where are you wanting us to go? And I think, you know, like good worship leaders are both pastors and prophets, in that you're asking as a pastor a question, which is, Lord, where are we as a church right now? What is it that you're saying to us? What it is, what's going on? How do we reflect that in our worship? But then as a prophet, you're asking, Lord, where do you want to take us that's beyond where we are now? Where do you want to take us that's fresh? And how can we reflect that in our worship? Now, if you're just a pastor and not a prophet, everyone will stay together, but you won't go anywhere new. If you're just a prophet and not a pastor, you'll take off on the first song. You'll close your eyes. You and the band will go into the third heaven. You'll whiz around being spontaneous and la-la-laing and everything. You'll come into land half an hour later and you'll wonder where everyone went. And it's a funny mixture of the two. And for us as pastors, you know, and I've been trying to serve with worship leaders forever, and I'm passionate about this. That's why I'm here. It's that funny mixture of helping the ones who are more pastoral to be a little more prophetic and to say, go on, sing out. And I remember with Tim Hughes, I felt the Lord say to me that he was to start singing out. And don't you start laughing. Don't start laughing. I knew it. I could feel it. She's heard this story a million times. Apparently, I've told her and Andy this story quite a few times. And the last time I told them, they burst out laughing. Yeah. And with Tim, I remember I said to him, I think you're meant to start singing out. And in ministry times, I think the Lord's going to give you words for people. And he was struggling. I said, go for it, mate. And I remember he said to me, you do know that at the beginning, I'm going to get it wrong a lot, don't you? And I said, yeah, okay. And he said, that is okay, isn't it? I said, yeah. And he said, no, because sometimes, you know, straight after meetings, you know, we get together and we have the post-mortem. And it's like, oh, that went on too long. You repeated that too. You're not going to do that because the words were, I don't thrive under criticism, you know, which when your worship leader tells you that, you know, you've done something wrong. And actually I had to decide, you know what? I've got to keep my mouth shut, and we let it grow. And you know, it was amazing after a while. In the ministry times, he used to sing songs over people as they were getting prayed for, and they didn't know he was singing over them, and things would happen. The Spirit would move. And then he talked about it. He said, do you know, as I was singing, I felt the Lord gave me a song for them, and I could see stuff happening, a bit like the strings, but with words. And then there was one evening when I was sitting watching the ministry on the side of the stage, and suddenly the Holy Spirit came on me. And I was like, what is going on here? And I just, met with the Lord, and he spoke to me and he met with me. And afterwards I said to Tim, do you know, in the middle of that ministry time, I was just sitting there watching, overseeing the ministry, and the Holy Spirit came on me and thus and that. And Tim kind of teared up and he said, God gave me a song over you. I had no idea. And if I hadn't have made space for that to, shut up. If I hadn't made space, for that to grow, we would have missed it. But then I had to encourage Tim, the prophetic in Tim, because he's a pastor now. His default is pastoral. But then other of worship leaders that I work with who are really, their default is prophetic, I actually have to remind them sometimes, you know what? Go for it, but just check every now and then that people are there, they're still with you. And if no one's singing and no one's going for it, maybe move on. And you know, it's different with different ones, and there's an element of common sense, but it's, and that's where we need to work together. And I've seen, you know, pastoral worship leaders grow in the prophetic, and prophetic worship leaders grow in the pastoral. And that's when it becomes safe. And that's when the amazing things happen. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I said it. Who else? Oh, yeah.
I'm going to ask two questions, if that's okay. One is from all the worship leaders. Is there a style of playing that you as worship leaders would reject? And how would you go about challenging favoritism in a worship band? So if you want everyone to be involved, but it seems there's a group and it's them, but they won't let anyone else in, if that makes sense.
Is there a worship style as you mean the style of music? Maybe no. What I would encourage is a Simon and Garfunkel style, and I've been encouraging that for years because I know that's how we're going to worship in heaven. But I have a losing battle. Do you know what? I'm not sure that. You know, like, I don't think there's a style that's evil or a style. I think it's, I mean, what you guys did in the early days, it was in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And what it was, what I loved was it was utterly anointed, but also it was contemporary for that day. It was soft rock, the Eagles. Those of you that know the Eagles, it was the Eagles. You know, and it was there. And actually, we're worshiping in a culture, not there's, you know, everyone's in a culture. So it's what resonates with people. I think if it was a style that was of so minority that 10% of folk in the congregation would feel comfortable in that style, I'd say, maybe that's not helpful. Rather than that's evil, that's good. I don't think classical is good, you know, heavy metal is evil, or the other way around. I think it's more where are you at? And actually, sometimes in a church that has many different people, everyone has to make a few sacrifices.
Yeah, I agree. I think I was out in Uganda a little while ago. With my wife and with the charity that we're involved in. And, I was helping in the church there and it was really interesting to see because, when they were just doing their sort of their own music, they were into it and it was all like this drums and it was amazing, sounded amazing. And it was like a natural, really natural fit. I remember they started to sing "Here I Am to Worship," and but like everything changed, and it became like trying to sound like an English setup. And I remember saying to the worship leader, because he was asking me like, "Oh, how, you know, what should we do, and how can we make it sound a bit more like this?" And I remember saying to him, "Don't just try and make that sound, because what you guys do when you're not trying to be, you know, Soul Survivor or whatever, is amazing. Like, they sounded absolutely amazing, and you could tell everyone was involved in it, and it felt really alien for them to try and pull this other thing in. And so I think that's sort of what's going to communicate and draw people into the worship of God most effectively in the context and the culture you're in. And sometimes we're going to love it because we're going to be like, that's our culture. This is wicked. And other times we're going to feel slightly like this is a little, you know, this doesn't suit me, but it totally suits this crowd of people. And so I think asking that question is really key. So.
And the second question, I wasn't sure quite completely understood is it when you feel that there's, the worship band are an exclusive, closed shop? And yeah. I mean, I think it all depends. That's a very specific question. So, it might be one to chat with folk after because it all depends on the circumstances. Half of me wants to answer, guys, we need to remember that no one has a right to be involved in leading worship. You know, it's, we get asked, we get invited, just like no one has a right to preach or a right to do evangelism. And, you know, if there's a worship band and they're a band together and they feel called to lead worship together, that doesn't mean that they're just trying to be obedient to Jesus. At the same time, you know, it can be like, you know, this is the exclusive club that's superior. They're the in crowd and they make everyone else feel the out crowd. And if in a church, you're not, there's no one's making space to train others up, to encourage others. I think that's in its death throes in anything. you know, if any group, you know, has an exclusive contract, you know, we're always wanting, trying to raise up more speakers, preachers, evangelists, musicians, worship leaders. That's healthy. So it all depends on what the circumstances are. But I think as much as possible, honest conversations, you know, is, you know, I'd love to grow in this. I'd love to be involved. I'd love to learn about this. Is it possible? I don't know how else to answer that. Anyone else got a?
One of our, at the church I'm in, one of our focuses this year in the worship team is inclusivity, because we felt like, we have these bands and the guys who play in the bands, and it's a little bit sort of set in stone. You know, these guys play and that's how it goes. So one of the things, we had three things that we're going to push into this year, and one of them was inclusivity. And the way we talked about it was, how do we loosen the fringe, like the boundary a little bit, so that people can come towards us and, you know, it's a little bit easier. And one of the ways that we've tried to do that is by saying, so we're having a band practice, and we might invite a couple of other people into the band practice. So one of the guys, Andy, who's here somewhere, who leads one of the bands, they're having band practice, and he'd invited this other drummer into the band practice just to be part of it. Just come and hang out, be part of it, and why don't you play along for a song or whatever. And then some of our all band meetings, we've tried to say, let's invite some of the guys who are sort of coming towards us, but it's not like a promise, like you're going to now be playing or you're going to be, but it's just to say, come and just be a part of the community for a while, you know, come and be part of this. And so there's been a couple, we sort of made a value decision. This is what we'd like to do. And then we made a couple of distinctive decisions as to how are we intentionally going to work that out? What's that going to look like? And so we're still in the sort of early stages of that. But I think there are things that you can do to encourage that sort of culture. I was listening to a talk recently, and the guy was talking about culture, and he said, culture, it either happens by default or design. Culture happens by default or design. If it's by default, it tends to be just, you know, what is or what always has been, or the loudest person in the room. Or you design it and you say, this is what we'd like it to be. And so for us, it's quite a relevant question in some ways. We've had that same question. Like, how do we become a bit more inclusive? We'd like that to be the design in our worship culture community. And so then we've made a few intentional steps towards that. So whatever that would look like for in your situation, whatever that would look like, I just think it's worth reflecting on and going, if I could design this, if it could look like this, how can we get there? And just limit it to like a few things. Let's try this, this, and this for now. But.
Next.
Hello. Oh, hi.
This gentleman, and then after, is it possible this gentleman sat his hand up for a while?
Hi. Yeah. I'm going to be joining my church's worship band in September, and when you're worshipping, the atmosphere can change quite a lot, and you'll need to be able to, like, fluctuate with that. And so I didn't know if there was any ways that you can, like, communicate on the spot with the rest of the band, like, say, oh, we need to bring the keys up in this bit and the drum needs to come down, to kind of accommodate with how everything's going.
Great. Well, do you want to do your signals bits?
So we have a few signals. You might have seen us on stage. We're not dancing around being divas. They're actually signals. But just some simple things that we do is to signal to the band is we, you know, if we're in the middle of a song, we want to bring it down a touch. One thing we'll do is we'll bring our guitar up and then just try and bring it down. And that's a signal just to say, hey, let's bring it down a touch. Not stop, but let's just bring it down. And then if we want to repeat a section, so if we're feeling like, oh, let's repeat this chorus, this is a, you know, great truth, let's sing it again, we'll stick our leg out like that, being a diva. And then some of us as well use body language, so we'll start, you know, see us stamping a little bit of like, yeah, come on, let's go for it, let's give it our all. And that's often to kind of bring it up a bit as well. Is there any other signals? You do some different ones, don't you?
We slightly do the opposite. So I lift the guitar to build and then lower the guitar to drop. With the guys I play with also often,
I'll turn around if we're going to go to like drums and bass, two fingers in an appropriate way, means drums and bass. And, one finger means just drums. So we just have like an internal sign language. But yeah.
It's just really important to watch, isn't it? For musicians to really know that actually a massive part of being able to lead worship means that by default, someone has got to know roughly where things are going. To have eyes on the worship leader and to be watching all the key moments doesn't mean that you have to literally, you know, you can't engage in worship yourself, but just at the end of each section, just having your eyes up, so that you can tell where the person's going. But also I think partly you just, the more you play with people, I think that particularly if you're leading, you know, lots of services, like quite regularly at your church, maybe you're one of the only worship leaders or it seems to be the same crew each Sunday. You know, despite the skill of musicianship level, actually the more you play with each other, the better you'll be at leading worship. And I guess that's the aim, isn't it? But, you know, being able to be flexible and telling where each other's going. So, yeah.
And just finally, the most important signal of all, it's the one that is reserved for pastors, which is, and you need to do that with a fierce look, because what worship leaders tend to do is when they know you're about to do it, they close their eyes suddenly and they're like, and they close their eyes until they've started the next song. And then they open them and smile at you and like, oh, were you trying to say something to me? You see, I know all the tricks. Sorry? Yes.
Okay. You've said such a lot between you and it's all fantastic. At the church where I'm at, I'm a violinist, I've been all my life, and I do a lot of improvisational playing, as well as the melodies, etc., you know, and I have a wonderful keyboard player in the particular group I play with, and we can sometimes improvise, just the two of us, say during communion or whatever. But what we've felt sometimes, especially she's leading from the keyboard, and she's a wonderful singer as well, is, you know, feeling the mood of the folks there. Whatever's happening, whether they're people who have walked straight into the church that day, or whether they're regular members, or whatever, or family service. But what do you think about, you know, this business of, you know, as Carl's was touching on that, of sensing, you know, what the Holy Spirit's up to, which to me is really the key thing. I mean, we often have a set list. I just have the keys at the side of the pieces. But we can leave a song, another one can come in, and, you know, a few of us can do that, you know, whatever the key happens to be. But it's the improvisation aspect I've found as I've got older and used it more is so freeing spiritually. You know what I mean? It's difficult to put into words, and I just wonder what you think about that area. And have you had a lot of experience or any of that?
Well, we experienced that the other day. With the strings and everything. So I think there is a place for that. I don't think there's anything we particularly want. That's great. Thank you for your contribution. I don't think there's a lot we'd want to. Yeah.
I have a question for you. How many of you are in churches that are 100 people or less? Raise your hand. Yeah. So that's a different dynamic. These guys are all in big churches and have a lot of people on the team, and I'm a small church, it's about 200 people, and we don't have a drummer most of the time. We kind of rent one, you know, from another church, and we have one bass player that's really, really good, and he can only come once a month. But you've got to work with what you have, and so some of your stuff, you know, these are good answers that we give, but they're not relevant to you because you might not have any choice but this, you know, this one bass player or this one flute player or something of that nature. And I've always been asked, you know, once I teach like a seminar on developing your worship team, and I go through all the criteria and everything else, and I've been asked, well, what do you do if you don't have that? And I've said, Well, you compromise. You just have to make do with what you have. And hopefully they have a good attitude. So, you know, you might want to ask a couple questions as it relates to that, because it's challenging when you have a smaller talent pool, right? So do any of you face things like that? Okay, you're the only musician in your church. Yeah, I would too. I don't know what you'd do about that. Pray him in.
Yeah, I go to a church with a membership of about 10, and then there's a peripheral people who make it up to about 30 on a good day. And for about 8 years now, I've been the only musician. I play the piano. And as I've been moving on with my own relationship with God, I find it harder and harder, because I want to really free up and lead in a more spontaneous way. And I find it really difficult to get the congregation to go with me in that. And sometimes I'll carry on playing and everyone just stops singing because we've done the song through once. And maybe if I'm lucky, I can get them to repeat the chorus. But it's really tough. So I don't know. So I don't suppose you can't solve my problem. No. Only God can. But, yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that, Carl.
I don't even have a good suggestion for you. Because I've never faced that problem. And I think it's obviously, as the thing grows and expands and people do more, you have to cut it down a little bit and do less of the stuff. But I really don't know what you can do other than use tracks, you know, to help with that. But I don't have any other idea of what you do.
I think if there's 30 people in your church, in some ways, although it's a lot of pressure on you to do it every single week, that's all you need. And to have any more, you know, to have a huge band and almost wouldn't suit the context in some ways. So although it's a huge responsibility, what a privilege that you know, a bit like Dave was saying about just designing and shaping that culture, that you know, you can play such a significant role in that and see there's something great about having the continuity of actually the same person leading the same group of people each week. And that, although I sense your struggle, actually it could be a really, really positive thing. You know, you get to journey with those people over weeks, months, years. You know exactly what they've been, you know, where the church has been and the journey that it's been on. And so that could be just a really positive thing, I think. And you could be key in shaping where worship gets taken. So, yeah.
So I grew up in a church in Birmingham that wasn't a big church. It was a vineyard church, but it was wasn't a large church at all. And I remember, like, in particularly in our youth group, which was really small, I'd lead worship every Sunday. And so probably from, I think I started leading worship when I was 10. And so from like 10 to like 18, I reckon most Sundays I led worship. And actually, what that did was it was like quite equipping, because I just, you know, I got lots of practice. And and then as and when you know, people materialized, I could say, oh, amazing, a keyboardist display. In fact, we even got we sent people on music lessons in order to try and make a band. Like, I just had a guy, he didn't play anything, but I was like, can you go and practice keyboard first? So he went away and practiced keyboard for a year, and literally and then he learned like the basic chords, and we just tried our best with this, you know, with what we had. And I think Carl's absolutely right that you have to just go, what have we got? And then with that, what's the best that we can do? And it's leading people, but it's also, I think that just keep in mind that it's actually ministering to the Lord at the same time. And I think even if that does mean week in, week out, I think there's something really precious about the cost of that for you before the Lord, to say, Lord, this is our offering to you.
Another question. Yeah, this is where. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Coming back to kids ministry, I think it's really hard in my church, at least, to get the worship band to engage with the kids' songs or any action things. And it's trying to build a culture where kids' worship is kids' worship has a place as well within that, at kind of like all age or anything like that.
Do you know, I think we might leave that one only because we're the wrong people to ask a question on that, because none of us do that. You know, I mean, they do it twice a year. We don't do it at all. I mean, Carl, if he met a kid, he'd scare them to death. You know, we'd be making stuff up, to be honest. So we don't do that. I go to churches a lot where they do that, and they do that well, and they would answer the question really well, but there's no point us pretending. Sorry, but we just won't be helpful to you.
Yeah, we do it once a month, so I'm happy to speak to him afterwards.
Great.
If anyone else wants to talk about all-age worship, I can help. Separate question about non-Christians and whether they should be part of the worship band or not, or people who are kind of seeking on a kind of journey, but maybe they've not, you know, prayed a prayer or been baptized or anything. So I obviously think the worship leader, the main worship leader, should definitely be a Christian. And I'm very, you know, that's what we do in our church. And most of the band are Christians, but there's the odd person thinking, oh, they would be brilliant. They would fill a massive gap in our band, but I'm not sure whether I should really ask them because we're leading people in worship. So that's my dilemma.
The answer to that question is very clear and very obvious. And anyone should know the answer. Carl.
You have to deal with that all the time. I actually believe you can have non-Christians as part of your team. I picked up a hitchhiker one time, and he was, you know, coming back from a bar, and he played the bass, and I said, well, come play bass with our church, you know? And I got to know him, and, you know, he'd show up on Sunday mornings after having played at the bars all night and smelled like cigarettes and smelled like alcohol. But, you know, eventually his girlfriend came and we counseled with them, and they got married. And I had another young guy, he claimed to be an atheist, who's like 14 years old, but played the keyboards and was pretty good at guitar. And so we included him, and eventually he just fell in love with us and fell in love with Jesus as a result of it. So I've never been very superstitious about getting cooties, you know, from non-Christians. I always look at people as Christians just waiting to be born. And so I treat them that way. And some people don't. The worship's more sacred and they protect it a little bit more than that. But I found that it's a good way to disciple people, you know, before they even know. Jesus' disciples were disciples before they were Christians, right? I don't know how that works, but, I know if God's at work with somebody, I can trust that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'd like to ask, how do you start something new in your church? In terms of, in our church, we don't really have a worship band. We just have one person who leads worship, but she doesn't really lead it in front. She sits with her back facing the congregation. But there's musicians in our church, and we'd like to start a band. There's a bit of opposition with a few people, so we were wondering, how do we start something new?
Is the leader I just need to ask a question of this lady. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Is the leader of your church open to it? Open to?
Yeah, the pastor is. The pastor's open to having the band, having a band, but this particular person who's led the worship for years in that church, she's quite stubborn. I don't know how to explain it, but she's awkward.
Yeah. And the thing is, if she's been, bless her, if she's been leading the worship on her piano with her back to the congregation for 20, 30 years, you know what? It's her moment of significance. It's the moment she lives for in the week, and she'll defend it like a Rottweiler. And because that's like, you know what? This is where I belong. This is all I have, maybe. This is the main thing I do. And so you just got to really love her, and you got to encourage her to see the benefits, you know, and that you're not trying to replace her, but actually add to what she does. And the best thing is, even though, because she will be really prickly, is to get beside her, and maybe for the pastor as much as possible to do that, and share the vision and give her time. You know, I think if you say to someone, next week we're changing it all, then they will have a meltdown. If you tell them, do you know what? In a while, let's look at, do you know what? What about, let me introduce you to, why don't they play with you? You could really help them. You could really teach them. And why don't we go on a little journey and all of that? And then you don't do it for 6 months. She's got used to the idea. I think there's the brutal way of doing it, and then there's the kinder way of doing it. And, you know, we said at the other seminar, I think if you want to, well, you just said it, I think, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And, you know, bringing change in a church, in the culture of a church, it's like boiling a frog. You know, if you put it in boiling water, it'll hop out. But if you put it in cold water and turn the heat up slowly, the frog won't notice the difference, and it will stay in and be boiled. And that's how you bring change to a church. You boil them slowly. You turn up the heat, and they won't notice. Do it suddenly. And you know what? The big error most many leaders make is, if as a leader you get too far ahead of your congregation, they mistake you for the enemy and shoot you. So just stay a little bit ahead and shepherd them as much as possible. Sometimes you can't take everyone with you, but as followers of Jesus, as much as we can, as much as we can, without one person stopping everything. And it may be that, you know, it may be that she can't. She will resist any change, in which case there'd be another answer. But try that first. Try that first. And probably, you know, if she just knows she's loved and valued, it's as much about value. Last little thing, a friend of mine who leads a church that has grown rapidly recently, phoned me and said, do you know, I don't know what to do. Some of my leaders who were at the beginning with me, who are my friends, you know, I'm having to employ more staff and more pastors, and they can't be in the core group in the same way that they were. And they're really struggling. They're really struggling. And I hate it. I hate seeing that. I hate, you know, what do I do? And I said to my friend, don't assume that it's a power thing. It might be a relationship thing. It might not be that, oh, because you can explain, you know, it might be that, you know what? I'm not going to see you so much. I'm not going to hang out with you so much. So take them out for meals, you know. You know, make sure you keep the relationship. And they know they'll keep the friendship, even if they won't have the same role at the heart of the church. It's such a pastoral issue. All the best. I hope that helps. Is there anything else? Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah, we're over here.
Oh, right. Okay.
This is quite practical. We have quite a lot of freedom in the worship here, don't we? And do you ever feel like stopping the worship shorter than you maybe intended? So sometimes we like go on for a long time, and that definitely happens in our church. But do you ever get the sense maybe that God's like, actually, we've kind of got to a good place. And this is where we kind of want it to finish, like, and being comfortable maybe stopping the worship, the musical worship, earlier than you would like plan to.
Yeah, well, sometimes. I mean, we had it the other, I don't know, a couple of days ago or a day ago, I can't remember, when it just was like, gosh, actually we've got as far as it seems right to stop. You know, did you want to? Yeah, so absolutely do that. Anyone else? Yes, there. We might make this. How are we doing?
Hi, yeah, I've just taken over a role of overseeing the worship team at my church, and my question is about song selection from the other worship leaders, and how much might I interfere if I think they could pick better songs or more appropriate songs, and with that, the use of a song list, like how valuable you think having a song list for the church is.
Yeah, I think one of the important things is when you've got lots of worship leaders in your church is to have a unified set list, really, of like a bank of songs that you're all doing. So when, especially when you're introducing new songs, it's, you're all doing it together. You know, you don't just have one worship leader who just sings that one song every week. But that's kind of what we'll do. So, we'll kind of, you know, I'll get emails saying, hey, I'm loving this song at the moment. Like, I think it could be a great one for church. And then I'll have a listen. And then what we'll do is we'll send it to Mike to have a listen and check he's happy. And then we try it, you know. And that's often the way we introduce songs, really. We try them. And sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes, you know, you only find out by doing it. And I think, you know, there's no shame in trying it. I think that's... especially like some of our new songs as well. We'll try them, and then it's a good way of, like, you know, bless them. Our church have probably heard about 3 different versions of that Jesus, I Love You song. I'm probably sick to death of it now with all the verses being different. But it's a real good way of just getting a sense as well of what works and what doesn't. But definitely the main answer to your question is just be unified doing it together. I think if you're holding that, you know, you and your pastor, you choose those new songs that you want to introduce, the bank of songs that you feel these are the songs we want to sing for now, and try and get everyone on the same page to do that. And listen to them as well. You know, if they're suggesting some good songs as well, get their input on it as well. And I think that'll be really good for the team.
Just a tiny thing to add is that also, on the flip side, like I 100% agree with that. So this is an and rather than a but. On the side, like each worship leader will bring their own flavour and their own. So we've got one worship leader at the church who always digs out some brilliant, beautiful hymns. And she just does that really, really well. She picks, you know, some great ones that we might not necessarily have grown up on. So each person has their own different flavour to bring as well. But I guess when it's done in relationship and the person knows that you're for them, then you can gradually steer, you know, if it's clear leadership, you know, that you've got with these other worship leaders, then that makes your job a whole lot easier.
Okay. One more question? Maybe here.
This is kind of a two-parter-ish. So I have just started to get into leading worship at my church. I've been singing in the band for a while, but I find it absolutely terrifying, and I want to know kind of how to get over that kind of first hurdle of being able to let the Spirit lead through me, because at the minute I just kind of plan it and make sure I've done it as I've planned it, and I'm really scared to just get into it and get into the flow. And the other thing is, this time last year when I got the call to start leading worship, I started to teach myself how to play keyboard. Is it easier to do it with an instrument, or am I okay just to keep going with my voice?
Sorry, the first part of the question was, you just started leading worship, that's right. I personally think for the first, if I'm thinking back to me, the first time I ever led worship in my cell group, to be honest, I was just trying to get through it. I was that nervous. And I think if I had waited until I felt super confident in a musical way and super confident to follow the Spirit, that day literally would never have come, because there's so many things you're holding together when you're leading worship. You're watching how the congregation's responding. You're trying to get the words right, particularly if you don't have word projection. So you're trying to memorize the chords and all of that kind of stuff. and you're trying to sense where the Holy Spirit is leading. So I think it's okay to just kind of get yourself through it. I'm sure the first talks that, you know, Mike and Andy would have given, it was just, you know, let's just get through this before they can go off piste and not use notes, that kind of thing. So it's a gradual building up of that. Well, we might beg to differ, but sorry, the second part of your question. Oh, keys. Yeah, I think generally it helps if you have some sort of musical knowledge further down the line. If you're leading with a group of musicians, I guess it depends what your context is. And if you have a great musician that you've got a good relationship with that understands where you're trying to go, I think that's really the key thing. I know that people that have tried to lead vocally with a different person as their kind of right hand man or woman, whether that's on acoustic or keys or whatever, that's quite difficult if you have a different person each week, because effectively they are really helping to steer. You know, there's something about being able to change key or decide in the moment we're going to go and do this song, and you can literally just play it. You need that person to really be on the same page. So maybe it's finding that person that can, if you've got that kind of context, that can be with you each time you're on the rota to lead. Or maybe it is just starting small and just gradually picking up on an instrument so that you've got a bit of music theory in your head, and that will help you communicate with whoever you're leading with.
So particularly the first bit of your question, it's not spiritual at all, but I always have in my head, if I'm ever like worried about something or concerned, I always have the Dr. Pepper question going around my head. You know, the what's the worst that can happen? Have you ever seen the Dr. Pepper advert? What's the worst that can happen? I remember leading worship at something a while ago, and it was like felt like a big thing, and I was like, oh man, we didn't feel prepared, and I was like, this could go so bad, and I was like really feeling it. And I remember just asking myself, I was like, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen? And actually, if you follow that through, the worst is never really that bad. It's like, okay, so it could go not very well. I could feel a bit embarrassed for a while. But that's not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not so bad. Like Jesus still loves us, I think. I've got a family who love me, I try and like build this bigger perspective. I'm like, do you know what? What is the worst that can happen? I'm just going to give it a shot. So from a sort of totally unspiritual point of view, I just ask that question nearly every time. Like the other day doing here on the Wednesday morning, I was like, do you know what? What's the worst that can happen? So I find that helpful, but also I think, if you're confident in your leader, or you know your leader has confidence in you, and that fear of failure can be sort of quashed a little bit, like the way Mike was talking about with Tim, just Tim saying, I'm going to get it wrong. Is that going to be okay? I think for me personally, that's quite a key thing, knowing that actually the person who's calling the shots or whatever is for you, and that sort of creates this arena of safety to operate out of. And then also, on a more spiritual note, just knowing that if this is the Lord calling me into this, then there's a step of obedience, and that's always going to feel a little bit scary, particularly at the beginning. It's always going to feel a little scary, but actually that step of obedience is so important. And remembering that actually in our weakness, he is strong. And so I think, you know, where we feel lack often, and I've often felt this if I'm leading, when I feel like I've really got nothing to offer, it's often in those moments where just God seems to do something. And so I think if you can, rather than being like, man, I've got to nail this, I've got to get this sorted, I've got to absolutely, you know, I've got to do really well here, but have your confidence in, Lord, would you come and be, would you be in this? Because that's the most crucial thing, the most crucial element. You know, if that's your prayer and your focus, then I think that could be really helpful as well.
I'll just say one thing to end on that, about how, just to emphasize how, you know, it just helps if you practice on your instrument and actually just be musical. How many of you have been to Soul Survivor? Then you know about my singing ability. Those of you that don't, it's not the best. And that's why everyone's been shouting at me to sing, because at Soul Survivor on the last night's tradition, I sing a song because I'm such a bad singer. When I was a youth worker at St. Andrew's Chorley Wood before we planted our church, the director of worship, director of music left, and there was a gap. And my vicar, David Pitches, asked me if I would be acting director of music, director of worship. And he said to me, he said, I'm asking you because I know you have the values and I need someone with the values there. I made the horrific mistake of in order to, cause it was at the time when Matt was 15, Martin Lazell was 14. You know, there were all these kids in my youth group and I wanted, and so I put myself down to lead worship. And I can't sing and I can't play an instrument. So I had a microphone in front of me, but they switched it off. And I wrote the list and I practiced everyone. And I was like, now we're going to, and all of that. By a miracle, the first time it went really well by a miracle. And then I thought, oh gosh, maybe I can do it. And then the second time it was an utter car wreck. It was a crash to end all crashes. And it was like, I wanted to put a paper bag over my head and leave by a back entrance and never be seen again. And actually that was just a funny story, really. That wasn't to illustrate anything. It just occurred to me. I hope that hasn't put you off. But it's a journey for most people. Beth said it's not pass or fail. It's a journey. And yeah, it is, in my case, it was fail. That was the last time ever. But yeah, you do need folk that are confident in you and that believe in you. But also just the last thing I'd say genuinely is never, never, ever feel you've arrived. There's always more to learn. You know, that years ago, there was one worship leader I worked with, and there came a point, he became quite good. And there became a point where we were just saying something to him and we got back, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it wasn't just yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like, it was a few times. It was like, you know what? I don't need to learn anymore. I'm there. And I kind of knew in my heart, you know what? We're never going to grow from here. Always be a learner. Always be humble. Always be teachable. One of the amazing things about your husband, about Andy, is he's always, always, always learning, growing. You know, after he's given a talk, can you give me, what could I have done better? What do you think about this? Thank you for saying that. That's really helpful. But sometimes he'll say, I don't understand. Say it some more. And he's not like a yes person, but he's always, always trying to grow, trying to hone. You know, and it's not about being perfect. It's just about always being inquisitive, always longing. Do you know what? I want to communicate this the best way I can. I've been inspired by Andy. It hasn't shown yet, but to try and work on, you know what? I want to do better in my preparation. I want to do better in my background reading. I want to do better in my thinking through illustrations, you know, because we just want to serve him the best that we can. And at the same time, have fun. Because when you stop having fun, it's really bad. All right. And Carl, why don't you just close in prayer for us?